You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Jada Lucas.
And I'm Wes Martin. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, March 5th, 2018.
I would not have universities do hearings for sexual assault at all. Let's leave the adjudication to the courts. In the majority of these cases, the prosecutor would look at it and say, I'm not charging this.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with Amelia Lahn, a top lawyer for young men at Indiana University who have been accused of sexual assault. Glab speaks with Lahn about her work and her opinions on the campus's treatment of sexual misconduct cases. That's coming up on today's edition of Big Talk Extra with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we'll hear from Spencer Pride's Judy Ebb. She says the upcoming festival is an important show of solidarity for the LGBT community. We'll hear more from Epp on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines.
Say's firefly is now Indiana's state insect. On Tuesday, a bill submitted by the students of West Lafayette's Cumberland Elementary School passed the Indiana House of Representatives 93-3. The bill passed in the state Senate unanimously. Governor Eric Holcomb, who championed the proposal on behalf of Cumberland students, has vowed to sign it into law. Holcomb says he wants to teach Indiana's youngest citizens about the lawmaking process. In a statement after the passage of the measure, the governor stated, quote, I know this bill bugged some of my legislative friends, but the truth is, it's a big deal to young students around the state who have reached out to us in support, unquote. The firefly, although technically a beetle, is native to Indiana and named for Thomas Say, a 19th century naturalist, widely considered to be the father of American entomology.
This short session of the Indiana legislature is expected to close next Wednesday. As WFHB's Jonah Chester reports, Indiana State Senator Mark Stoops and Representative Matt Pierce updated members of Bloomington's League of Women Voters on Saturday. According to Pierce, today is the last day for the legislature to hear bills.
The 2018 Indiana General Assembly legislative session will be drawing to a conclusion on March 14th. This year's session saw the passage of several bills ranging from the legalization of Sunday alcohol sales to legislation prohibiting eyeball tattooing. In an address to the Bloomington branch of the League of Women Voters, Bloomington Senator Mark Stoops and House Representative Matt Pierce discussed the legislation that passed through the General Assembly this session. According to Pierce, the last opportunity for the Senate to vote on legislation was today.
So on Monday in the House is the last day for us to vote on Senate bills for final passage. And then any Senate bill that hasn't passed the House by that point is theoretically dead. And then the same thing for House bills over in the Senate. For some reason, they're like one day behind us. So I think the final day for them to vote on House bills will be Tuesday.
Pierce said that the majority of the next week will be spent in conference committees finalizing the text and debating amendments on bills that have already been passed by the General Assembly. From there, the finalized versions of the bills will be sent on to Governor Holcomb to be signed into law. Governor Holcomb has until the legislative deadline of March 14th to sign any pending legislation. Despite the passage of several dozen bills, this most recent session has been relatively quiet compared to past sessions, according to Pierce.
The thing that's odd about this session is it's kind of the quietest. I mean, it's probably a little too much to call it a do-nothing session because there are bills that I don't think the general public cares about, but they're important to the particular people it might affect or involved in that issue. And so, you know, for example, it turns out that some school system somewhere were telling kids that they considered sunscreen to be like a prescription drug, so you couldn't bring sunscreen to school, or you had to go to the nurse to get it put on, or it was crazy. So we had to pass a bill saying that sunscreens are not drugs, so that kids could basically, and the dermatologist wanted that, so that's reasonable, so we voted that through. The eye doctors were concerned about a new craze that I never heard of. Apparently, people are tattooing the whites of their eyes, which sounds like the craziest thing I've ever heard of. So we've, a bill's moving through that will make that illegal in the state of Indiana, because obviously that's pretty dangerous for one's vision. If either house is actually on the floor voting or getting ready to come back from a caucus or something, usually there's like an army of lobbyists and different people, and it can be really crowded and kind of chaotic. And as you walk through there, and there have been several times where we've come back from our caucus to go back to the floor to vote, and I mean, there are like four people sleeping, you know, in a corner someplace in the state house. The quietest thing I've ever seen.
Pierce went on to criticize the General Assembly for not passing more legislation on issues such as Indiana's recent problems within its Department of Child Services.
There's also things not getting done. So you might have seen there's a new report or an update from these consulting firms looking at DCS. And they were talking about the concerns that maybe the caseworkers weren't getting the training they needed. There's a shortage of attorneys to handle the cases. So that slows things down and a number of things. And I was kind of surprised because the speaker and the president pro tem, I saw a quote in the paper. Hopefully it's an accurate quote, but it was something along the lines of like, yeah, we knew that already. No surprises there. Well, if you knew that you had those problems already, why aren't you doing something to solve them? Why are you waiting around? I guess the governor is going to solve all this stuff in June, I guess, is the theory. But that's an example of something we haven't really addressed.
Senator Stoops also expressed criticisms of the Indiana Senate for failing to pass any gun control legislation in the wake of the Parkland shooting last month.
As everybody knows, there have been seven now deadly killings in the United States in schools since the beginning of the year. I think we had an opportunity in the Indiana legislature to actually get some language on the books for universal background checks for the purchase of guns, banning of these automatic weapons, and language that would make sure that people who had guns in their house had them locked up and safely stored so that kids or other people that shouldn't get access to them didn't. And this is a bill that's passed in many other states, including some very conservative states, and has had a real effect on some of the violence we've seen.
The Indiana General Assembly will reconvene in November to begin introducing legislation for the 2019 session. For WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
The Indiana Secretary of State's office is announcing a new method of registering to vote. According to a press release from Secretary of State Connie Lawson's office, residents will now be able to text the word Indiana to 2VOTE to register to vote. Lawson's office announced the new voter registration system last Monday. In a written statement, she writes, quote, "We are always looking for new and innovative ways to help Hoosiers register and vote. Millennials and younger voters expect the flexibility to register from their phone, and we are giving them one more way to do this," unquote. After texting Indiana to vote, residents receive a link to the state's registration website, indianavoters.com.
The Monroe County Election Board is encouraging voters to cast their ballots early for the May 8th primary election. Monroe County Clerk Nicole Brown announced early voting hours in the board's meeting on Thursday.
Primary voting hours for the 2018 election will be April 10th to May 4th, 2018, Monday through Friday, 8 o'clock a.m. to 6 o'clock p.m. Between April 28th and May 5th, which are two Saturdays, the last two Saturdays of the month prior to the election, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., and then finally on May 7th, 8 o'clock a.m. to noon. That is the day before the elections on May 8th.
Board member Carolyn Vandeweel says early voting has increased in recent years as more voters become aware of the option. Indiana University is also making early preparations for the primary election. Lisa Marie Napoli is with IU's Political and Civic Engagement Program. Napoli says the PACE department is working to familiarize students with the voting process through a mock voting event. She says a mock polling site will be set up in the University Club on Wednesday, April 4th, from noon to 3 p.m.
We want to be able to give students a little warm-up, a little preview, let them know we're calling it a spring into, for the working title right now is Spring into Civic Awareness and Civic Engagement. And we'd like to have a mock polling site set up so that students who've never voted before or are have been resistant to voting, we'd like to overcome that barrier and be able to give them an experience in what the polling site might look like and their experience of that so that they could feel comfortable, share with friends, spread the word, and show up for voting on Election Day.
Napoli says students can also register to vote at the event. Board members William Ellis and Carolyn Vanderweel says they will be on hand to help clarify which precinct students can vote in. The next election board meeting is scheduled for April 5th at 1 p.m. in the Nat U Hill Room at the Monroe County Courthouse. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Jada Lucas.
And I'm Wes Martin. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Amelia Lawn is one of the top defense lawyers for young men accused of rape or sexual assault on IU Bloomington's campus. Lawn previously worked on the IU Student Conduct Hearing Board before she went into private practice in 2014. She talked about her strong opinions on the campus process, as well as all her family's traditions of working in law. When she joined Michael Glab last week on Big Talk, Lawrence talks about the sexual assault legal process at IU and more on today's edition of Big Talk Extra.
Amelia, why you?
Good question. It's funny when I talk to, you know, friends from high school, whatever, I say, no one grows up and thinks, I'm going to be the rape lawyer. You know, that it's not like when I was six, at school career day, I said, hey, I'm going to grow up and be a rape lawyer. But it's interesting. I think it's just a sense of it's a matter of timing and kind of the way things happen. So it was in around 2014 that I was thinking, you know, I wanted more flexibility in my job and I wanted to really be using my law degree because I had passed the bar, but I wasn't working as an attorney. And I reached out to Catherine Lyle. She's a family friend. And I said, you know, I want to go into being a lawyer. Like, do you want an associate? And she said, no, I don't. You should start your own firm and I'm going to help you. She is my mentor, and she really like showed me the way of how to start my own law firm. I rent office space from her, so we're right there across the hall from each other. And it just so happened that I knew a lot about the IU process, having worked there, and most lawyers don't. Partly because I think the IU system is so different than real court. You know, they don't have continuances, for example. So like in real court, you could say, you know, we don't have enough discovery to need to have a hearing today or whatever the situation is, my kid's sick or anything that might come up, and you can just push the hearing out another month. I've asked for sexual assault hearings to be moved before and they say no, and they just set them whenever they want to. You know, like in real court, they'll say, like, I have a trial right now set for April 9th. We set it at April 9th a long time ago. If something comes up, we'll move it. We'll all agree, like, hey, that's not a great date. Let's move it. Or if I had a family emergency or something like that, we would move it. But at IU, they don't set it until about a week before it takes place. So you can't have it on your calendar. You're not planning for it. Just all of a sudden, guess what? Sexual assault hearing. So one weekend, I had three hearings in one weekend. The hearings take place on weekends. So I had Friday night, Saturday morning, Sunday morning, three different clients, three different hearings.
Did you get any sleep?
No, I did not.
I didn't think so.
So a lot of lawyers don't like IU system. The other thing that's really difficult.
Well, you don't like the system.
Don't like working in the system, I guess I'll say. I like working with the system. It's something I know about. I feel like I like the people who work there. It's easy to work. You know, I understand the system.
But if you were drawing it up.
I would not have universities do hearings for sexual assault at all. What I would do, and I've said this in past interviews, but I think schools are uniquely situated to help people who have made an accusation of sexual assault in a way that the courts and police officers and prosecutors cannot. For example, if I come to my RA and say I was sexually assaulted last week, this guy's in my finite class, I have to see him every day, IU can move those people so they're not in the same class. They'll move the respondent first, unless the complainant would like to be the one moved. Otherwise, they move the respondent. So she could say, I don't want him in my dorm. I don't want to see him at mealtime or whatever the case may be. Or if the girl says, you know, I'm so distraught about this, but I have a final on Friday, the school will contact the professor and say, explain a little bit about what's going on and ask if she can have an extension of time on that. You know, the police cannot do that. The prosecutors can't do that. But the school is uniquely situated to help somebody with that. Right. But I think let's leave the adjudication to the courts.
So whenever there's an accusation, it should go to the prosecutor.
That's exactly what I think.
That's serious stuff now. Now you're not just talking about you're suspended or you're getting kicked out of school. You're talking about could be jail.
Yeah, except in the majority of these cases, the prosecutor would look at it and say, I'm not charging this. There's no evidence. Uh-huh. There's conflicting stories. I thought it was interesting in that the Yale story in the New York Times, one of the victim's advocates was saying, well, complainants don't want to go have to be questioned because their credibility is put into question. And it's like, yes, it should be put into question. You're making an accusation against somebody and it relies on your credibility. Why wouldn't your credibility be questioned? If we're trying to figure out the truth, then it matters that the person's credible who's making an accusation.
Are you a truth teller?
Right.
Yeah.
And is your story likely true? You know, by talking to witnesses and looking at circumstantial evidence, that kind of thing.
At some certain point, you said, now I think I'm going to be a lawyer. When was that point?
Well, you could say that point was I had my daughter, Monet, who just turned 13. I had her when I was a junior at IU, and I thought, wow, I guess I need a job where I can support myself, because my plan had been to kind of like, let's see how it goes, like maybe be a Italian teacher in high school, right, or who knows. But and then I have a family history of being in law. My mom's an attorney. My dad's a paralegal. My mom actually had my bassinet at Ferguson and Ferguson Law Firm when I was a baby.
And by the way, if I may say, Carol Seaman, your mother.
Yes.
Is a big shot at the Cook Group. She is she's an attorney. She's the vice president, global chief ethics and compliance officer.
Yes.
Did that inspire you, the fact that she's a very successful attorney?
It did. And I always say she's a big shot. She's very humble and disagrees, but that's what I say. But, you know, I was raised by an attorney, as you just said. And so we had very much, we talked about law around the dinner table. We had all these philosophical discussions about right and wrong and what processes should be followed in given situations. And, you know, compliance officer, we had a lot of rules.
Yeah.
So I do think that really did help focus my decision. And she didn't make any secret of that. It's hard to practice law and it's a demanding job. And so I knew that going into it. But I just think it's so interesting. And I love reading and writing. Those are two of my favorite things. Yeah. And arguing with people.
What better field
where I can combine all those things?
Now, what was harder? What is harder? Law school or practicing?
Well, you know, they're harder in different ways. In law school, they really just throw you in the deep end. They have the Socratic method where that you'll get cold called and you just have to kind of take it from there. Like we all saw in the paper chase and movies like that. That's really what it's like. And I would just be sitting there with like sweat dripping down my back. I remember just depending on the professor too.
Yeah.
But that is really good preparation for lawyering because you have to think quickly. If a judge asks you a question, you have to be able to answer it, that kind of thing. So it's good to be able to know how to process a lot of information quickly and analyze it for the answers that you need. But lawyering is difficult in a certain way because It's not just the solving problems. You also are in somebody's real life, which is one thing I like about both family law and criminal law is, especially I think my practice is focused on, I like to think of myself as very parent friendly. You know, we have a lot of parents send their kids to IU that text them every day. They're very involved in their child's life still. And so they need someone to kind of do some hand holding and explain the process to them, help assuage their fears and concerns a little bit, and just someone to be there to rely on throughout the process who knows what they're going through. I think people need that almost as much as any other part of the process.
That's funny you bring that up, because there is a website called AVO, and that is a sort of a lawyer ranking type of website.
Yes.
And here's a quote from a parent. As a parent, you never expect that you will get a phone call in the middle of the night from your college student telling you they need legal assistance. That's scary.
Yeah, it is.
My kid's going to jail.
Yeah, especially.
Or my kid's getting kicked out of school.
Yeah, especially for parents who are far away.
Right.
I think. And just, you know, being treated with respect and being listened to, all that kind of thing. It's just, it's a lot more complicated than reading a case book and reciting that back to a professor, I think.
Mom, your dad, are they proud of your work?
Yes, I think so. I think they are. My dad, now that he's retired, he comes to my hearings sometimes. So if I have a big case, he'll come. Or I was pro temming the other day. It's like a substitute judge where you're sitting. He came and watched me judge for a few
Bang
hours.
Your gavel.
Yeah. There was no gavel. I was disappointed. I wanted a gavel.
That was attorney Amelia Lawn, who represents young men accused of rape or sexual assault on IU's campus. Lawn spoke with Big Talk's Michael Glab on Thursday's episode. That interview and more is available on WFHB's website, wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in, and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, my name is Judy Epp, and I'm a director, treasurer, and volunteer coordinator for Spencer Pride. Spencer Pride's core mission is to promote and celebrate the GLBT community in the rural areas. We support the community by holding events. We have our annual festival on the Courthouse Lawn in Spencer, which is a really big deal because, as far as we know, we're the only Pride organization in the country to hold a festival on the Courthouse Lawn. And we're pretty sure we're the only one with a drag show on the Courthouse Lawn. So that makes us unique in that we're out there, we're showing everyone in our community that it is okay to be out, you can be safe and be out, and that's the big thrust of the festival. And our other event is the Night at the Tivoli. It's for GLBT History Month. We do it in October. All of our events are free, which is very important to us, especially in our community. And now we're getting ready to open a community center on the square in Spencer. There are still people who are afraid to be out in the rural community. And I think now more than ever, the community center is so important because the political atmosphere lately is making it kind of scary for minorities. The GLBT community, we are not only a minority in society, we're oftentimes a minority within our own family. So it makes it a more difficult situation for that reason. And again, in the rural community, people are more afraid because a lot of people know other people. It's that small town atmosphere where everybody knows everybody and everybody knows your business. It's a little different because there aren't other resources in the community. We're pretty much it. And a good example of this is Kathy Wyatt is the president of our local PFLAG, White River Valley PFLAG. She has tried to have meetings in Spencer before and people won't come. Parents, it's for parents, friends, and family. They're afraid. They have told her, somebody might see me coming there. And then my child doesn't want to be out, or I'm afraid to be out. Because once the children are out, the parents have to come out as well. And oftentimes they've got a business. They're afraid they'll lose business if people find out. And after the Orlando shooting, Kathy's phone was blowing up with parents wanting help. So she again tried to have a meeting in Spencer in our community center, and one parent showed up. So parents are still fearful in the rural community of people knowing that their child is gay for whatever reason. So we're working very, very hard to dispel their fears and help them realize it's okay, we'll help you through this. Just take a step toward us and we'll be there with the handout. But so we're trying to normalize our people in the rural community is pretty much what we're trying to do. Thanks for listening. I'm Judy with Spencer Pride.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
I'm Lucy Shake with three ways to volunteer for the LGBTQIA community in Bloomington and beyond. You can get involved with Spencer Pride. They welcome everyone to join them as they continue to cultivate a community of compassion and celebration for all people. Volunteers are invited to get involved in their two annual events each year, the Spencer Pride Festival in June and a night at the Tivoli in October. If you're an advocate for the LGBT community and passionate about music, check out the Quarryland Men's Chorus. Any man, regardless of his musical background, can join the chorus's cadre of supportive, enthusiastic performing members. The chorus also relies on a dedicated team of offstage members, both men and women, to help with behind-the-scenes tasks. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Jonah Chester, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glad. Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by the Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Smedsky, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Jada Lucas.
And I'm Wes Martin. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org. You can also be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system, coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.